This is Wade Rathke with Wade's World. It must be Friday. It's going to be from 9 to 9:30. We're on KABF, FM 88.3, 100,000 watts of people power. This is the voice of the people in Little Rock, Arkansas, on the web, and this will be podcast. Wade's World, every Friday, talks to the most interesting people in the world. Today, we're fortunate to have Kevin Whalen, campaign director for the Home Defenders League, I believe it is, Kevin, but you'll straighten all this out for me. And Kevin's an old friend and comrade, so it's a pleasure to get to talk to him on Wade's World. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. So, my man, New York Times yesterday. I saw your quote.
You know, it was good that the New York Times is following this issue. Sometimes, the fact that banks are ripping off homeowners and weaseling out of whatever good they'd agreed to do is considered sort of, dog bites man. It's not news because that's the way it is. But it's pretty important. It's about the bulk of the wealth in working class people's lives are caught up in their homes, and it's still in the process of being ripped off as it has been in the past 5 or 6 years ever since the banks crashed the economy.
Well, and this is an old theme of ours on Citizen Wealth, so you're singing to this choir. You know, the problem with the Times is they don't have police reports like we have in some local newspapers, because if they had police reports, this banking criminal conspiracy we've had, since 2007, 2008, would probably take up most of the space. But I think your quote, though, Kevin, it was an excellent one, was about the monitor's report on one of the more recent settlements, $25 billion, that arose from five banks, including all the big bad boys, Chase, Citi, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America particularly, because they were playing fast and loose and making up documents sort of as they could rather than bothering to actually go through the process, get people to sign them. Is that right?
Well, that's right. So they got caught, submitting false documents to the court, which if I, forged some piece of paper and brought it down to a judge and got caught, I'd expect to be in pretty big trouble.
Oh, I'd be calling to a jail cell, I think, on one of your few calls of the day.
I think so. They set up whole factories to forge documents, got caught, and in exchange, didn't get locked up, but agreed to this settlement, which was supposed to bring $25 billion in relief to underwater and distressed homeowners across the country. So that's where it came from. And what we were talking about in the paper yesterday, and have been talking about to anybody who will listen for a long time, is, as it turns out, both based on the sort of loopholes and details that they put into the settlement and based on sort of how they've chosen to comply or how they've been held accountable to it, more of what counts as relief has gone either to things that banks would have done in the course of business anyway, like writing off a second mortgage on a house where the first mortgage is bad and it's worthless anyway, or even doing things called short sales and deeds in lieu of foreclosure, which is just a more orderly process of putting a family out of its house. They've even counted some money for anti-blight work as relief under the settlement, meaning that banks are claiming cases where they take my house, put me out of it, and bulldoze it to the ground, and that's supposed to be two kinds of relief for me. And it's not really the word that, relief isn't the word that comes to mind, for the families where we see people fighting banks every day.
No, this is, it's really just been a travesty of injustice, and even these settlements, frankly, have been patty cake. I mean, the numbers may look big, but Kevin, and just as you're saying, too many times these are essentially accounting ledger changes for banks where they've had ghost properties that weren't performing. This has cleaned up some of their balance sheet on their inventory that they should have done by, pricing to market. I mean, a lot of these are people that were underwater who they were still trying to claim the value of the house was the same as it was before the meltdown and implosion in so many real estate markets, and now, oh well, we'll do some bookkeeping here and say that we've that's a principal reduction, or we'll let you refinance. I mean, I couldn't believe how much money, you know, what was it, $5 billion or more that they counted as refinancing, which is essentially taking non-performing loans, letting the bank make money on the closing cost, and having somebody start paying them for what the house is really worth now as opposed to what it was worth. Crazy, huh?
And that demand is that sort of process of doing principal reduction, of just letting people pay based on what a house is really worth rather than what the inflated value was at the height of the housing bubble, is sort of at one of the things that's at the core of what the Home Defenders League and the constellation of allied groups that are fighting for some kind of just resolution to this whole crisis are fighting for, which is, you know, really just acknowledging reality. And rather than dragging out a foreclosure process on houses or waiting till somebody in the end sort of has to walk away, to acknowledge what houses are really worth and move forward. And the irony is, it's not even a bad thing necessarily for the investors or the people who ultimately own the loans, right? Because you'd rather do better by having a loan that makes sense for people to pay on over the long time.
Well, we think that, but I guess that's why we're not bankers, because certainly that's something that should have been happening for years now, Kevin.
Right. Well, one of the good things that's come out of the national mortgage settlement, as inadequate as it is there are some number of billions of dollars in there that have been first lien principal reduction. And they're a progressive victory and something that people have fought for in this way, that there is now an acknowledged system by the big banks about how this can make sense to do, and there's a process you can get into, and sometimes it happens, either under the terms of the settlement or because you yell and scream at them and occupy your house and get on TV. Somebody here in Minneapolis just ran for mayor as part of getting her bank to be responsive to her. But it's at least been acknowledged as something that they can and ought to do, and it's a matter of fighting either at the community level, or it's still possible that we can fight and win more and bigger settlements, hopefully get a few of the details a little bit better this time.
Well, hope springs eternal, and that's why we do the work, there's no question. But, you know, this is, unfortunately, we're now, it's sort of like a post-Katrina phenomenon. We're at a point now where people have heard about foreclosures so often that they like to pretend they're, you know, all the spin now is upticks in the real estate market and, you know, big hedge funds buying properties and, you know, they're starting to blow the air into another bubble almost, it seems like, Kevin, without having dealt with catastrophes in terms of personal tragedies and family problems and the loss of citizen wealth and home ownership that's occurred over the last number of years. How many people are still facing foreclosure? What figures are you guys using these days?
Well, depending on which sort of commercial estimates you use, there's 10 to 13 million people who are underwater on their homes right now, or families, so it's more people than that, but 10 to 13 million underwater households.
And by underwater, as everyone knows, we mean the family owes more on the house to the bank than the market says it's worth anymore.
That's right. So not all of those will necessarily end in foreclosure, but anybody who's underwater, and the farther you are underwater, is at risk for foreclosure, because in some economic sense it doesn't even make sense to pay on that loan. If you were a banker, you'd probably walk away from it. And then, you know, other people face foreclosure just, you know, because of being short on money, job loss, anything else. So we're still, experts, you know, it's hard to know for sure, but experts tell us we may not be halfway through the number of families losing their home in this whole crisis. We're talking about, you know, millions more homes and the wealth stored in them that are still at stake based on whether or not we make smart public policy choices and how hard we fight.
The problem is that so many people, when you look at the numbers, I mean, unless we have really hugely significant recoveries in some of the markets in California and Phoenix and Vegas and elsewhere, we're talking about what could be 20 or 30 years before it recovers back to the level of the mortgage. So these are heroes in some cases, these people that are trying to stay in the houses. That's why it's so incredible that banks aren't willing to sort of go ahead and readjust their balance sheets appropriately to be able to reflect the real value that allows people to have performing loans and protect neighborhoods. I thought you made a good point, and times, obviously, yesterday, and this is the point we all make, that about the impact this has to communities, huh, Kevin? Not just families.
Well, that's right. I mean, a family losing its home is a tragedy. It means they're out that wealth, and I know you always talk about citizen wealth, but what does a vacant house on your block do that relationships with people's neighbors and their kids and their schools is broken, and an empty house on the block, as any community organizer can tell you, is one of the first things that people would notice making their house go down. It affects the tax base, so the cities have either higher taxes or less money for services or both. And this is, still a very serious matter for especially cities in the West. We've been fighting this campaign that's come to the foremost in Richmond, California, that's taken on a very aggressive and interesting program to tackle the banks on all this. And half the houses there are still underwater. It means really a whole city, that whole city is still at stake, and that's true for tons of cities where the market rose to the highest level. And people who did nothing wrong other than buy a house for what houses cost, it's not like they had a choice in the matter, are looking at seeing the whole city and community torn apart. So it's still a very serious matter in any of those markets, and little upticks in the housing price here and there don't really change that equation.
Well, they sure don't, because the studies, as you and I know, indicate that if you even have an abandoned house within a half a mile of where you live, it'll reduce the value of your property by at least 1%. And you start talking about some of these neighborhoods, and many of them I know I've been in Phoenix and outside of Atlanta and around, Southern California. You'll go into whole neighborhoods where you used to have houses that they, claim were worth $250,000 or $300,000 that are now worth $150,000. And you'll walk down the block and there'll be two people living here and two people that are waiting for a short sale and three that are fighting. It's devastating. Richmond, though, is interesting. I got, as you know, in social policy recently, we ran a large front page story on some of the developments with the Progressive Alliance there in Richmond and the other allies that have been involved. And I think recently the case you're talking about is the city council has taken a bold step forward to actually use some of its powers of eminent domain to force a refinancing, a sort of a reset, if you will, to market price for some number of properties, the fairly significant number of properties that were underwater. Clearly, the banks are screaming like stuck pigs about this, but this is a very creative strategy. What are you hearing about its chances?
Well, it's very interesting because it's upset the Wall Street bankers like nothing else. It seems to, uttering the word.
It already sounds good, Kevin.
It just seems to, be better than marching 10,000 people into their lobby is just having one person in Richmond, California whisper that we're going to use the power of our democracy to fix this problem, and that seems to be the one thing that they just cannot abide. So it's interesting. It helps you understand the whole financial mess, and that what Richmond is asked to do so far, they haven't used eminent domain on anything. They've merely sent a letter to investors and servicers that own a certain pool of loans. It's 624 loans that are held in what are called PLS trusts. They're essentially the ones where Wall Street has sliced and diced the ownership up into so many parts that even if everybody agrees, there's no way to modify the loan in a rational way. And what the letter said is that they would like to buy them at the fair market price on the secondary market, the same price that banks buy and sell them to each other for every single day. The banks, when they're dealing with each other, know that a loan is what a loan is really worth now. And if you had an investor that wanted to do the right thing, they could buy it at that rate, refinance it so the family has equity, and still make money on the whole transaction. So that's what Richmond is proposing. And they did say in their letter that they would use eminent domain if they had to do this, but they'd rather sit down and negotiate and have a talk. Because it could be actually a win-win for a family, a city, and even the investors that own a loan.
It's strictly hardball, though. I know when I was out visiting with them, they were telling me about the problems that had come up in Riverside when they thought about the same kind of strategy, and I guess they just had corporate jets rolling in one after another with people from every kind of financial institution in Wall Street threatening them that they would never be able to sell another dollar in bonds for any capital improvement. I mean, it just basically telling them they were going to be ostracized totally as in the city of Riverside, which is another one of these, you know, very difficult areas in terms of foreclosure. And I know you know that part of the country. That's not too far from where you went to school, isn't it?
Yeah, there in San Bernardino, even closer where I went to school, the same thing happened. The Wall Street managed to, every moneyed thing and a couple you've never heard of flew into town and threatened people with Armageddon if they took the stand. The difference in Richmond versus those other places are, well, two really. One, this mayor who comes out of a progressive alliance that you covered in social policy and so is sort of deeply rooted in these progressive politics, and then, probably not to your surprise, in-depth community organizing. The organization ACE and part of the Home Defenders, got the list of the people whose loans would be affected by this, and you know, the dirty trick of actually going and talking to people and explaining the program and asking them what they thought. So there were hundreds and hundreds of people at the key city council meeting that stretched on till 2 in the morning, where a couple of council members, after all the threats, wanted to back out of the program and others wanted to advance it. And with hundreds of people there on the scene and testifying about what this meant to them and their communities, they took the next step forward. And I think Richmond's boldness is going to inspire other cities to step forward.
Have you actually heard of any cities that I know originally they were... The Richmond council people were saying they were getting a lot of inquiries, but nobody's really surfaced yet that I've heard, but I'm not as close to it. You may know.
Yeah, nobody else has gone as far as Richmond yet, but there are a couple other California cities, El Monte and La Puente, that have been looking very closely at it. They need at least one other California city to go along with them to form the kind of authority. San Francisco, interestingly, a couple of council supervisors stepped out. But there is a pretty powerful community coalition working on this in Seattle and in a number of New Jersey cities. So I think you're going to see more coming online. You know, the temptation is to throw, by elected officials, if the community isn't pushing them, is to throw Richmond into the water and see if it survives.
But yeah, right.
I think that's the right way to do it, right? Capital can probably crush Richmond, but it would be different to say we're going to crush Richmond, you know, Newark, Seattle, Minneapolis, the whole state of Ohio, whatever. You know, if I can get it going in more places, it's harder for them to make these kinds of threats.
Certainly you can't be sympathetic to them. Whatever problems they have, this is something they've brought to themselves, because the Treasury Department and really the Obama administration toadied to the big banks around modifications, allowing them to control and run these programs. And time again, we've seen it for years, no goals have ever been met in terms of the number of people who might have gotten modifications and stayed in their houses. It's been one delay after another as the banks looked after their interests rather than borrowers and homeowners. So this has been really perhaps the darkest cloud that's shadowed the entire Obama administration, in my view, over the last 5 years, is just the way they've sort of curried to Wall Street on this problem of that really affects, as you said, more than 10 million families still, and God knows how many people. We're talking 20 or 25 million probably at the least, who really had their lives devastated by the results of Wall Street and, irresponsibility, yet have not really been able to get the government to do much to stand up. I know y'all were even talking about why there weren't, or y'all led the fight to talk about why haven't there been more criminal proceedings here, huh?
Absolutely. You know, if these people stole some that's a little difficult to comprehend, but as far as I can figure, it was more than all the money in the world by the time they had to do the bailouts. Money somewhere in excess of all the money that exists disappear and nobody goes to jail, nobody's prosecuted. Somebody had to be guilty of something. And people who are in the midst of fighting for their homes were willing to come to D.C. In this Justice to Justice rally and risk arrest in, very tough actions over the course of a week to make this point. They wanted to save their homes. They also want to see some justice for themselves and their neighbors. And I do think their courage has some effect. I think everybody had pretty much given up on any more settlements or Wall Street prosecutions, and now all of a sudden there's stuff that's back in the news about Chase negotiating over whether it's a $4 billion or $20 billion or $11 billion settlement. We certainly have to keep our eyes on it and fight for it to be strong, but I do think the fact that it's outrageous, and most people think it's outrageous, means that people raising it in a courageous way still has some effect.
Well, there's no question, and we're talking to Kevin Whalen, who's the campaign director and a seasoned community and labor organizer for a number of years. He's the campaign director for the Home Defenders League. He's actually headquartered in Twin Cities, Minnesota. We're talking to him about the problems for homeowners that are still fighting the after effects of the meltdown of the real estate market caused by Wall Street irresponsibility. Jamie Dimon, head of Chase, you know, certainly was front page news for a long time as supposedly being, you know, Obama's favorite banker and this, that, and the other. How can he possibly not be fired, given the penalties they're having to pay, the gazillions and billions of dollars for everything from irresponsible trades in London to the fact that their hands were dirty up to their armpits on all of this mortgage problem? How can he have a job?
It's pretty incredible, especially since if you've ever spent any time on in the U.S. Capitol or state capitol trying to deal with legislation on this, you realize that the banks pretty much write all the rules to start with. So the fact that they can't then, you know, obey a single one of them, as far as we can tell, it kind of boggles the mind.
Well, that's a good point, because, I mean, I think some of the reports on their attempt to derail the, you know, regulation bill that came out here, the now all of a sudden I'm having a mental...
Dodd-Frank,
the bums, you know, trying to do Dodd-Frank, that a lot of that still hadn't taken effect because of all the bank lobbyists. So, yeah, they, you know, and stories have been, you know, common knowledge and well reported about them writing chapter and verse, word by word, paragraph to paragraph, some of these regulations. And I think your point's brilliant. Hey, why, you write it. Why can't you do it? I mean, if we all got to write the answers before we had the questions of the test, we'd all get 100, wouldn't we? Sheesh.
I think you'd get it right once in a while anyway.
That's right.
haven't broken yet. I do think it's possible there may be, as we get further into this, some splits in the different factions of finance capital against one another. God knows they're happy to divide us along whatever lines of homeowners versus renters or race or class or region. So the truth is that for investors, and the banks in talking about reduction always raise the specter of pension funds, you know, that will lose money if we do this. To hear them talk, the people who lobby for the secondary market, they're basically protectors of widows and orphans and grandmothers, because people have pension funds invested. But in truth, they'd all be better off by acknowledging reality and moving on. And some of the insanity in people trying to get their loans fixed is really driven by the fact that the people who service the loans, often Wells Fargo and Bank of America, the big banks of the world, really make their servicing money off of late fees. So they will, you know, mess you around and claim to lose your paperwork over and over, and they get paid on the late fees and foreclosure fees, which is a shameful way to make money, really, and also not really in the...
It's also systemic abuse. This is not a new problem. They've been losing paperwork by the tons, you know, now for years, and I noticed in that same article you were quoted where they were still claiming they were losing paper. I mean, give me a break. I mean, at one point we're going to say everybody's got online systems and computer programs and, you know, call banks. I mean, one of the Bank of America call center that they were running for Phoenix modifications was in Guatemala. I mean, we talked to them. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And in Costa Rica, I guess, so not Guatemala, but, you know, whatever. Yet they can't keep paperwork, and, God, we lose something here, we're in trouble. This really has gotten to be a level of absurdity. And is it just that it's so complex that people aren't willing to really stay on it like a dog on a bone and worry with it?
you know, I mean, obviously, you know, the some of the banks and big companies are playing a dual role here. So Wells Fargo is, on one hand, holding, with the example of these loans in Richmond, they're the trustee, right, which means that on behalf of some huge pool of investors, which might include, you know, hundreds of investors and big pension funds and various things, they're the owners of these loans, but they're also charging that same group of people to be the servicer, meaning they're making money by pretending
sure.
paperwork and screwing people over. But at some point, and you know, a couple of activists, somebody from SEIU and ACE stood up and directly challenged in a forum the heads of PIMCO and BlackRock, two giant investment firms that ultimately own a lot of this stuff, and asked, you know, why are you suing the city of Richmond? Why don't you negotiate? Because we're offering to pay fair market value, or maybe better, you know, make us an offer to get these loans fixed. And, you know, they got booted from the forum because there wasn't actually a question and answer period going on. But it's not an unreasonable question. At some point, this sort of screwing around and making money off of late fees by putting families out of their house could get replaced with the right political and regulatory and pressure and public shaming and ultimately economic self-interest with straightening this mess out that's dragging down the whole economy.
No question. And we talk about Wells Fargo, and I know you and I share a history of experience from our Acorn days with our huge fights against predatory practices by Wells Fargo. I know you must have seen this, and I took some real pleasure in the fact that a federal judge recently ordered Wells Fargo to have their CEO get a corporate resolution signed by their board taking full responsibility for the way their legal department was handling their case. Because that was always our experience. No matter how bad the practices of Wells Fargo were, their public advertisement about their program and what their legal department would do to fight, you know, tooth and nail and delay and obfuscate and everything else they could to ever have to admit to the liabilities and just try to drag you out forever rather than go ahead and do the right thing was legendary compared to even the worst of the rest of the banks we dealt with. I think they're starting to run to the end of their leash, so there's some optimism. This criminal conspiracy may finally, you know, come a cropper just because they can't seem to understand any limits, can they, Kevin?
They really can't. And the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, has been the strongest of the Attorney General.
He has stepped up. Good for him, huh?
He has, and he just filed suit against them for violating the terms of the national mortgage settlement.
Oh, right, I saw that, right.
They promised not to do. So, you know, with other banks in the press discussing another round of settlements, basically this time on all the funny business they did with other banks and investors, Wells Fargo seems not to be in that mix, but sort of fixing for a bigger legal fight. And if anybody at the Justice Department or, you know, other AGs up and down the country do their jobs, you know, we know for a fact that they were sort of uniquely energetic and effective at making predatory loans to anybody they could get to take them, but especially targeting African-American and Latino communities, proved all kinds of ways, and have been the worst people to deal with in trying to get any of it resolved, and then particularly aggressive in court and the legal end from Richmond, California, to any place else that tries to come up with some kind of solution. So they do deserve special opprobrium, and, you know, who knows, but that they might just get it. There's certainly community groups fighting them in various places all over the country and individual borrowers who are standing up and being courageous and fighting back, and that can add up.
There's a butt whipping in their future. Kevin Whalen is the campaign director for the Home Defenders League. Kevin, how can, if we've got some borrowers out there still sweating it who listen to this wage world, how can they get a hold of y'all?
So they can find us at homedefendersleague.org. Or Google something close to that and you'll find us. They can call us at 888-441-5527.
Why don't you repeat that another time for the...
They can find us at homedefendersleague.org, or if you Google Home Defenders, you'll find us. And the 800 number is 888-441-5527.
Anything coming up within the next month or two that we all need to look for the Home Defenders League?
Yeah, well, first, if there are people out there that are wanting to fight for their homes or bring these kinds of things to their community, go to those two places, and we do a couple of times a month a national conference call for everybody who's working to fight back. We've got organizers from the Home Defenders League and the Occupy Our Homes movement, and they'll sort of walk you through starting a petition online and talking to your neighbors and starting a community campaign wherever you are, whether there's a local community organization working on this or not, or how to start one.
We may have to talk to Kevin again soon in coming months. It's been fantastic getting to visit with you, Kevin, and to see the good work y'all are doing. This is Wade's World on KBF 88.3 FM, 100,000 watts of people power. We are the voice of the people. Wade's World comes on 9 to 9:30 every Friday. Next Friday, I think we're going to be probably talking more about Affordable Care Act, how to get on, Obamacare. Have a great Friday. Thanks, Kevin. We'll talk to everyone soon.